Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio, the show with a particular focus on those individuals and organizations who do an exceptional job of identifying, attracting, developing, and retaining high potential talent. The purpose of this show is to educate and engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all those who seek to optimize their leadership acumen, particularly their aptitude, their ability, and their attitude. So we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways to include resources and great advice, especially from the folks we have here today, that have led to their personal and professional success. So today we introduce two people who are leaders through their service of others. So they both have impressive resumes and a deep passion for their chosen fields, which incidentally revolve around people. So with that overview, we welcome Reverend Dr. Dwight Ike Reichert and Kathy Misseldine.
Hey, how are you?
Honored to be with you today.
Same here. So we're actually going to start with Kathy. So Kathy Misseldine has an extensive experience in many areas of strategic human resources management, or HR management. We're going to cut it down a little bit today, right?
Correct.
Fantastic. So Kathy has worked closely with executives in the areas of performance, productivity, organizational metrics, training, employee and customer engagement, workforce planning, organizational design, and strategic implementation. Sounds like all facets of the HR specter.
Pretty much. I usually focus on the strategic part, though.
Okay, yeah. And away from the tactical, right?
Away from the tactical.
Okay, yeah. So your past experience in operations and sales management in the technical insurance and hospitality industries has given you a broad understanding of business issues and a solid foundation for building performance-enhancing systems that support the business. So certainly we're going to have some questions related to that as well as we move through our conversation today.
Perfect.
So Kathy is a graduate from KSU, or Kennesaw State University, where she earned an MBA with an emphasis on, guess it, human resource management development.
Yep.
And so she's also a member of SHRM, or the Society for Human Resources Management, and holds their professional certification. She also has a senior professional in an HR designation. And today she's serving as president-elect for SHRM Atlanta for 2012. And she'll be taking over as president in 2013.
Yay.
So, Kevin, why aren't we playing All Hail the Chief at this point? It should have some pomp and circumstance, right?
You have just the most interesting guests. They're great.
Well, that is a big deal.
It really is.
You know, SHRM's an amazing organization, and for your peers to elect you to a position like that, that's really incredible.
Congratulations. And it is peer elected.
It is. I'm so honored. I mean, it's a 2,600 HR professionals.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're also serving as an adjunct professor at KSU, Kennesaw State University, as well as Emory University, mm-hmm. where you taught the HR certification course, an online SHRM certification course, as well as an in-class version. And so you're a nationally recognized speaker addressing audiences in the larger HR community, and you actually took time out to spend a little time with Global Leader Radio. So incredible.
Well, my heart's with KSU. You know that.
Absolutely. So in May 97, you actually started a business called Intellectual Capital Consulting along with your partner, Barbara Hughes.
Yep.
And your organization specializes in profitability through human capital. So, and you've had quite an impressive client list. I've been able to take a look at that as well.
Well, thank you.
And so, again, I want to thank you both for joining us today and discussing your businesses and the topic of global leadership with a slant on servant leadership. And so with regard to where we are and the kind of questions I want to ask, I'm going to open it up to Kathy. So, Kathy, again, would you give our listeners a sense of the size of SHRM? You did that briefly.
Okay.
And kind of talk a little bit more about that. And then SHRM Atlanta. So SHRM, the larger SHRM,
okay.
The national SHRM, and then SHRM Atlanta.
Perfect. I've just recently gotten back from a leadership conference from the national organization just last week.
Okay.
And so nationally, we're about 325,000 members strong.
325,000.
HR professionals. And so they're really focused on the global the global growth in HR for their organization, specifically in Asia. They're looking there, and they're looking at Thailand. They're looking at some places in Africa. So they're really expanding their footprint.
Okay.
And so that was interesting to hear that. So here local, we're just like a franchise of national.
Okay.
And so Atlanta is regarded as one of their super mega chapters because we have 2,600 members. And we're so proud of that, that we've kept those members through this recession. And so our main demographic for Sherm Atlanta, I would say, is that HR professional between 5 and 7 years. They're a generalist, perhaps a manager, maybe a director. So we really serve that segment of the HR market.
Interesting. So I had no idea that there were 2,600 members in Metro Atlanta. So are they? Is this the largest chapter of Sherm?
We're the largest single city chapter. Now, there are bigger chapters, but one of the bigger ones, let's say, is in California, but it's like 10 cities.
So we're so the. It's like a Metro Atlanta area. So it's Atlanta Sherm. So you have other Sherms around Atlanta? Is that?
Well, we've got primarily all of Atlanta. There's, I can't remember, 20-plus chapters in the state of Georgia.
Okay.
Augusta has one. Savannah has one.
Okay.
But for Atlanta, we pretty much have the metropolitan area.
Oh, fantastic. So what are some of the major initiatives that that you're focused on for the coming year?
Oh, goodness. Two are pretty near and dear to my heart. One is we are really focusing on the HR professional themselves. So we really want to take that HR professional and lift them up.
Mm.
You know, we want them, because we've had such an issue with HR's reputation, and Ike knows this, you know, whether to keep them, whether to fire them, whether they're overhead and all that kind of stuff, and whether they have a seat at that piece of furniture we won't talk about. And so, you know, so those days are over. You know, the recession forced our hand a little bit. So HR professionals had to make some really hard decisions, and they did it, you know. And so now it's time to really for them to lift up their skill set and become business people first, and HR people second.
Interesting.
And so that's going to be our focus, to develop that type of leader with Sherm Atlanta. Our second focus is also, our vision is to build a better Atlanta. And one way we're going to do that is do it through building better HR people that build better organizations that float into the community. But we're going to really start, we won a Pinnacle Award at our leadership conference for our work in the community.
Okay.
So our external relations committee was working with Atlanta City Youth, the Atlanta Mayor's Program, and training those youth, getting them job ready. And so we won an award for that, and we've, you know, we've won that award 3 times, so I'm very proud of our chapter.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent. So what drew you in particular to the leadership position at Sherm Atlanta?
I'll have to tell you, I started when I was at KSU.
Ah.
And this is not a commercial, but, you know, I was there. There was a student chapter. The president came and gave a presentation to our class there at KSU, talked to us about the benefit. I went to a meeting, and I was like, this is, as an HR professional, this is where I need to be so I continue to give back and I continue to hone my skills. And so I got in, and, you know, I have that servant leadership, you know, and I wanted to give back to my profession, and I learned a lot along the way, you know, so I've been doing this for a long time, you know. Yeah. And so this year was finally the year that I wanted to step up and be president.
Okay. And as Ike pointed out before, that is something that you actually voted to. How does that process work?
Right. There's a board of directors, and of course they recommend you, and then it is sent out to the members at large, and they vote, and it comes back, and I'm in.
Oh. And we're the better for it.
Absolutely.
We'll hope so.
So, Kathy, I know when I read through your bio, the one thing that really struck me was how incredibly busy you are and successful. So how do you juggle it all and maintain a healthy work-life balance in the process?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm better today. I don't think I have that answer, but I am better.
Okay.
You know, so I really have to, especially next year. I'm starting this year because I know next year is going to be crazy.
Okay.
With my full-time job, you know, owning my own business, and then leading Sherm Atlanta. So I just go by one of my favorite business book, Stephen Covey, you know, and I look at putting first things first. And so that's been kind of my philosophy, is I'm very goal oriented.
Okay.
So I know what I need to accomplish. You know, I'm very checklist oriented. And so I, you know, I try to do my best, and then I try to cut it off during the weekends. I try.
Okay.
That's
okay.
New. That's new.
Okay. Okay.
That's new. With all this technology, it's hard to do.
But so you actually do use to-do lists?
I do. Okay. I still do. Of course, it's on my iPad and not on a piece of paper.
Right, right.
But yeah, I do. I keep myself organized that way.
So is that one of your favorite iPad applications or iPhone applications?
Is
it one of the to-do list type?
Yes.
You care to give us a tip perhaps on which one works best for you?
I use the one in Outlook.
Okay.
And so, you know, it integrates with the iPad, my phone. I get the reminders and I'm good.
Because, you know, we're all about tips here. So
I know.
The people that are listening, we've got over 2 million people sitting out there in the audience.
Oh, you just made me nervous.
and that's 2 million put together over the next 10 years,
okay,
of course.
All right.
Okay. So it's a very aspirational number. But,
all right.
But we take it seriously that the folks that are actually listening to our program are interested in making sure that they get advice, tips, that they can immediately apply. That's one of the hallmarks of our executive MBA program as well. Immediate applicability is most important.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about HR's reputation and over the last few years or over the years period. So can you tell us where you think HR is today with regard to their reputation?
My glass is always half full. And so I feel like HR is at a crossroads today. I believe we weathered that recession. And like I said, we had to make some tough decisions, and CEOs depended on HR to help with those decisions when it came to people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when it came to benefits, and when it came to salary, and when it came to 401k cuts and things like that.
Okay.
And so I believe there was a lot of HR people that really stepped up to and really understood what it meant to be strategic and have an impact on the business.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet. So really what I think has to happen is we've got to really increase HR skill set in the business area.
Okay.
Just like I said, you've got to HR professionals need to be a business person first.
Okay.
And an HR person second, because that's what the business is demanding.
Yeah, and sometimes that does run counterintuitive to the way HR thinks, right?
I think that's the old way.
The old way.
We thought, because if you're getting in HR today because you like people,
mm-hmm.
that obviously that's part of it, but you still have to think like a business person, because, you know, if you think about businesses today, your average service-based business, 60-80% of the budget is tied up in people cost.
That's right. Pension, benefits, and taxes is what I typically call it.
Yeah. So with that sort of impact, you've got to have some sort of business acumen and business savvy. And I'm hoping hope is, you know, not a strategy, but I am hoping that, you know, next year at Sherm Atlanta, we can offer that sort of programming.
Okay. Well, yeah. I will tell you that over 50% of the people that join our executive MBA program are non-business majors. And they're undergrad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do is we take them, and of course they're working in the business sector today. We do have some HR professionals that have been through our program, many in our program, and lots in our current class too. And so the question is always the same, just as the one you posed. How do you then move from just a people focus to a focus that really looks at business itself? And so you nailed it. It's part of the educational process.
It is.
And really wanting to make sure that you give the biggest bang for the buck back to the business.
Absolutely.
Right? So so what is Sherm doing to address these needs in the marketplace as an overarching strategy, the need to have more people focused on business? Is Sherm doing anything in particular around that?
They are. I was really excited last year. Some of our leaders in Sherm Atlanta created a leadership academy in conjunction with another university. And what we did is worked with some of our leadership and the university to be able to come up with a curriculum that met some of these needs. Things like a financial course, you know, looking at balance sheets, looking at P&Ls, doing ROI calculations, you know, going from soup to nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, that was an all-day class.
Right.
Perfect.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so, you know, looking at some economics classes, looking at other business acumen classes, looking at a consulting approach to HR rather than a tactical approach. So we have a leadership academy. We put 2 full classes through, I'd say about, don't quote me on the numbers, but probably 40 HR professionals have been through that.
Oh, and how long has that been now?
We started it the year before last. Okay. And so...
So it's a 2011
initiative?
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, and that's fantastic. And so I'm going to hit the pause button real quickly, Kathy, and I'm going to pivot over to Ike.
Okay.
And so we'll bring Ike in. So Ike is the senior pastor at Piedmont Church, and he serves as the president and CEO of Must Ministries. And I'll tell you, when I told the ladies in the office who we were having over the next couple of weeks ago, and I told them Ike Reichert, of course, you know, it's almost like people in the band saying, wow, we got Ike's coming in. It's fantastic. So Ike serves as the president and CEO of Must Ministries, as I said before. He was the former EVP, or executive vice president, and chief people officer and originator of the Office of People and Culture for a financial service provider who achieved the distinction of becoming an employer of choice for 4 consecutive years. Impressive.
Thank you, sir.
So the company was selected and benchmarked by being included in Fortune magazine's list of 100 best places to work in America by the Great Places to Work Institute of San Francisco, California. So under Ike's leadership, this company was nominated and won the 2006 TurkNet Leadership Award for leadership character, and that TurkNet is a local organization.
KSU.
Yes, they are.
Absolutely.
Yes, they are. So Ike has appeared in a host of articles and news stories, too many to mention, but certainly you'll be able to see his bio on our web presence, so you'll be able to see all the intricacies of how strong this guy is, along with Kathy as well. So among Ike's numerous speaking engagements, he has had the privilege of speaking before the Georgia General Assembly in the United States Congress. So, again, welcome to the great Ike Reichert.
You are so kind, Alvin. Thank you. I'm sitting here listening to Kathy thinking, I feel like a pair of brown shoes with a tuxedo about right now because she is a professional's professional over here. You know, the kind of people that you just pray that you've got around you in an organization, and then to be able to bring someone like her into an organization to consult with you is what allows you to be able to build some truly great companies. And so the people who have that skill set and have devoted their life to it are my heroes. I promise you that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting that you mention it that way, Ike, because not only people like Kathy, but of course people like you and hundreds and scores of people that have been through our executive MBA program have realized that it takes more than just the business acumen and the interpersonal savvy to be able to make a great leader. It also takes that servant leadership aspect, the ability to give back, and we're going to be talking about that as we move through this conversation.
It's one of my favorite topics in the world.
And you certainly are passionate about that. So,
yes, sir.
So tell us about Must Ministries in particular and what you do as a leader of Must Ministries. And before I get you to do that, Must is spelled with all capitals for MUST, so is it an acronym, perhaps?
It is. It is. Originally, it stood for Methodist United Serving and Training. And that was the original acronym. Today it stands more for, you know, Ministries United Serving and Training, because it's so much more than just a denominational. But 41 years ago, it was some, very impressive Methodist folks. And I always just say Methodists are Baptists who know how to read and write. And so they organized and they put together this, you know, this great group that started meeting the needs. And, the vision statement for the organization I loved. The vision statement is to become Georgia's most respected servant leader. And then the mission statement is to serve our neighbors in need. And so those are two servant leader pieces that are just perfect. And, you know, again, 41 years, the gentleman that I followed, John Moeller, was just an outstanding leader there. Now is heading up Action Ministries, which is a part of the Methodist denomination. And so it was just a top-notch organization to be able to come into and to be able to work alongside. And now to see how can we continue to grow so that we can continue to help transform lives.
And you know what's interesting is that my next question was actually going to be around the vision statement, and you nailed it. And so you've helped me by providing a great segue. What is a servant leader, and is there a difference between them and any other type of leader?
Well, I think there really is a huge difference, and it's a person that realizes that the person who leads best serves at the greatest level. And I think it's Jim Collins in his book Good to Great, and doing Built to Last. He said he calls it a level 5 leader, And he says there's just not very many level five leaders that you can find. And he describes them as having fierce determination and yet at the same time great humility. And I think when people have that great humility, they will look at you and when they say there's not a job in this organization that I'm not willing to do, they really mean it and they do it. You know, for me, it's been the opportunities to be around people like a Dan Cathy at Chick-fil-A and to go out with him on a ride around. And we walk into a, you know, drive up into a parking lot and he immediately gets out. And if there's any loose trash that's flying around, he's picking it up and gathering it up and putting it in a garbage can. And he's not doing that to draw attention to himself. That's the way he's wired. He is a servant leader, and there are so many. And I think Jim Collins is a great example of being a servant leader.
So what are the other outward components? How does a servant leader behave?
Well, Robert Greenleaf, you know, that popularized the term, you know, being a servant leader, talked about, you know, that that person who leads in the organization because they have a heart for people. And we're talking about HR today and the role that it plays and why it is so important that you have business acumen. Kathy, as you are so accurately pointing out, if you're going to get a seat at that table that everyone talks about. And quite honestly, I don't think that you could have a servant leader organization where the person who heads up HR is not present at the table where decisions are made.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely paramount to me. But when you look at that servant leader, they're willing to lead by example. They truly believe in the organization and its mission, and they get behind it. And there's just some wonderful atmosphere and environment that's created when you're in a servant leader organization. And I love working with those kinds of groups. And it's amazing because you can see it in all different types of businesses. I work with a business down in Texas called Sewell Automotive Group, and they've been selling cars since 1916.
Wow.
And the guy who heads up Sewell down in Odessa, Texas, is in his 30s. He is a servant leader, and he brings me in periodically just to work with their workforce to be able to reinforce to them why it's so important that you lead from that servant's perspective of just saying, hey, listen, I want to put your needs, I want to put, you know, your desires at the forefront. And when you run into those kinds of organizations, you are immediately struck that there is a difference about these folks.
Yeah, interesting. So the behaviors that leaders possess and have shown you are the folks that really, number one, lead by example.
Yes, sir.
And then they get behind the organization. And
yes,
then they'll
do.
Call in for help. They're not afraid to say, I don't know it all.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I think that's the humility side that
Jim Collins talks
about. You know, fierce determination, usually you don't think of those two things together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because someone is fiercely determined, sometimes they can be so solely focused on something that they forget about the feelings of other people and their needs, and it all just becomes about the mission. And it's so easy to become that, and that's why I think he said it best when he said, but the leader who comes in has this great humility. You know, when something goes wrong, they'll say, well, I dropped the ball.
Right.
But
right.
When everything goes right, they say, we won the game.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of leaders that are like that.
No, there's not. And so I'm going to reserve a question that I actually I'm going to bring it forward now. Are leaders made or are leaders born? Kathy, we'll let you go first on this one.
Oh, my goodness. Tough question.
I'm glad you went first.
I'm going to have to say I believe it's some of both. I think we're born with some innate characteristics, character traits that make us better leaders. We're charismatic. You know, people are drawn to us. We're motivational, all those sort of things. But for me, in my experience, the best leaders are the ones that have got it by experience. They have been in the trenches. They learn by experience. They learn from their mistakes and their successes, and they do what Ike was describing. That's, you know, that's what I've seen. So I would say it's both. It's for me, it's very experiential.
I could not say it better than what you just explained to us, because I think sometimes there are leaders who innately just have a gift and want to be able to lead. Mm-hmm. And then there are the people along the way that begin to pick up the ideas mm-hmm. about how to lead, and they watch other leaders. And sometimes there's a leader who just really stands out. And if you've ever noticed, Alvin, I know we were talking earlier that all of us love sports, and there are certain coaches who have an uncanny ability to be able to produce assistant coaches that go on to become head coaches other places. And one of the hallmarks about them that you'll notice is that they're not so jealous of their own success that they don't pull for the success of that person who's been on their coaching staff to go out and then to be able to head up their own opportunity to be a head coach. And there is a difference in those servant leaders that it's about not only that the organization succeeds, mm-hmm. but that the individuals are succeeding in their career path as well. I can think, again, that's something that a servant leader recognizes.
That is a great point. And so you brought up a couple of things that I'll kind of swerve into next. So one of the great examples on the professional football ranks of a leader who has spawned a ton of head coaches and his family tree is huge is Bill Walsh of the 49ers, late Bill Walsh. It always brings to mind some of the leaders that are there. If anybody would kind of look into that from a research perspective, you'd be amazed how many people that are there that have been touched by this guy, which is important stuff. And so the other thing you mentioned was really around this concept of team, which is where I spent a lot of my free time researching teams. So can you give me an example of how you created an effective team to create a specific result?
Well, it's so nice to be able to sit here with Kathy as I relate this story, because it's about culture. I was called to come and to work for Home Bank, and the CEO, when I was talking to him about, well, what will be success for me, he was very specific. He had a very, very strong vision. He said, I want us to be worthy to be on the Fortune magazine list of the 100 best places mm-hmm. to work. Mm. And so I said, so let me get this straight. Is that like 100 small businesses and 100 medium-sized and 100 large ones, you know? And he goes, no. He said, the Fortune magazine, this is before Sherm started doing all of their work where they do recognize different-sized businesses, but you had to have 1,000 or more people working for you. And what was interesting, at that time, we only had about 800 people in the organization, but he told me, he said, I want you to go ahead and apply as if we were doing this just full bore, full tilt. We're going to pay the money. We're going to survey our people so that we can see where we are, even though we can't even qualify.
Ah.
Which tells you right up front that it's fully invested from the CEO's position.
He is serious.
Exactly. And so we were able to start building that culture at Home Bank because 2/3 of the vote comes down to what did the people who work for you say about the organization. If you're going to be a great place to work, the people who work there are the ones who are going to say, yeah, it's great, or no, it's not so great.
Yeah, they're the judges.
Exactly. And we averaged about 65% of our new hires would be people that were recommended by people who worked there.
Okay.
So we were finding out very quickly that people enjoyed working there enough that the majority of the people that we were hiring new were recommended by somebody already in the organization. And so we started working on how do you build that servant culture? What are the things that you can do? We built over a 5-year period, we helped to build 35 Habitat for Humanity houses.
Okay.
That we raised the money for, and then we would go out on the weekends and work together. As a matter of fact, we did an all-female build in Cobb County, and I got Betty Siegel to act as our head person. And she and I sat on a water cooler most of the day, but we solved about 90% of the world's problems
from that spot. Yeah.
From that very spot. And that was only one Saturday. Imagine if we'd have taken the full weekend. But then we raised over $1 million for the American Cancer Society through that group of people. And we started, you know, building the pieces that go together to build a truly great place to work. And, the Great Places to Work Institute does a survey that they call the Trust Index.
Okay.
And basically what they do is they measure 5 areas when we're looking at an organization. And the 5 are they measure respect. They want to know within an organization, do the employees feel respected by management? And, you know, they can assess the different levels in that organization. They can see, do you have support? Do you have collaboration? And when employees sense that you really do care, that management cares about them, mm-hmm. it builds a great organization. And then the second piece is camaraderie. That's where so many times when we were going out, whether we were doing a road race to raise money for the American Cancer Society or whether we were building that house for Habitat, that's where the camaraderie started really building. And, you know, Gallup has this stat that says if you have a best friend at work, you're 8 times more likely to stay in that job.
Yeah. Yes.
If you've got a best friend at work. And so, you know, I think about companies should find ways to increase camaraderie.
Yeah.
Because it's probably not going to be a best friend because they're sitting in a cubicle.
Makes sense.
It's going to be after work, or it's going to be when you've got a project that you're pulling together as a team. And then pride. Are you proud to say that you work for this organization? It's just like both of you are very proud. All three of us have attended Kennesaw State University. 2 out of the 3 graduated, and we won't bring up who the third one was that flunked out. But we have a great deal of pride about KSU. I was watching your face as you were talking about. You're proud of your school.
And, I am.
And I mean, it's an amazing story to see what's happened at KSU. So there's pride in that organization. Then there's credibility. That measures the extent to which the employees see the management. Are they credible? Are they believable? Mm-hmm. Are they trustworthy? Mm-hmm. And I would say for any leader, the single greatest factor is do people trust you? Because if they do not trust you, everything bogs down. You know, Stephen Covey Jr. Wrote the book called The Speed of Trust.
Yes.
And he said the level of change in an organization is directly relevant to the amount of trust in an organization.
Agreed.
The higher the trust, the faster the change. The lower the trust, the slower the change. Exactly. So, you know, credibility, camaraderie, all of those things. But the one that's the most difficult that they measure in that index of the 5 things is fairness. Because fairness is such a subjective thing.
Absolutely.
Why did that person get promoted and I didn't get promoted? And so, you know, but if they feel like you're using, you know, you're being impartial, you've got some things that are spelled out very clearly about how to move up in the organization and get a career path, then it makes a big difference. And, of course, these companies that have made this list of the great places to work, when they've been studied, their productivity, their retention, their level of engagement, which is what every organization wants. You know, I want to source and get great people. When the magazine article would come out every year in January, mm-hmm. over the next few months, we would average over 1,200 people applying for jobs.
Wow. Mm.
So it just
What better indicator can you have than that?
Before recession.
Yeah, that will. Maybe even higher now. But so, you know, it does make a great difference. And when you see the companies that are on that list, they're just some remarkable companies that are there.
Well, fantastic. I appreciate that. You've been listening to Global Leader Radio, and Ike Reichard is the guy you just heard talking. He's the senior pastor at Piedmont Church, and he serves as the president and CEO of Must Ministries. And along with him in the box today is Kathy Misseldine. She's currently serving as president-elect for Sherman Atlanta for 2012, when she will take over as president in 2013. And she also owns her own company, along with her business partner, Barbara Hughes, called Intellectual Capital Consulting. So I have to give a shout out to our good friend George Olney, who actually invited you over today,
and he's a great buddy,
and made it very possible for us to get together. And it's interesting, we were talking in the green room beforehand and in a lobby earlier, and for some reason all three of us seem to get along very well. It's like we've been knowing each other forever,
right?
And this is fantastic. So the question I have for both of you is: which leaders have impacted your life?
Which leaders have impacted our life? Not the book, but a leader.
Not the book, but a leader.
Mm. Well, goodness, there have been many. I've been very fortunate. You know, I can think of HR leaders that kind of molded me in my HR career. I can think of leaders at church that molded me personally. I can think of leaders in my own family that have helped me. If I had to say, you know, who was the most impactful in my life in a leadership position, I'd have to say it was probably one of my first bosses who, you know, saw that something in me and kept pushing me and pushing. Even when I didn't want to do something, she just kept pushing me and pushing me along the way and encouraged me to keep getting my education and going back to get my education and encouraging me to step out of my comfort zone. And so I think that's really what's made me successful today. And so she was awesome at doing that.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mike?
There's two for me that always leap off the page in my mind. And One is Zig Ziglar. I read his book called See You at the Top. My parents both had a fifth grade education. I was in my early 20s, did not have a college education at all, had flunked out of KSU after 1 year, and read the book See You at the Top, and it really challenged me. Never realized when I was reading that book that I would become friends with the author, that he would impact my life so much, that we wrote together, co-wrote together a book a couple of years ago. And even as we're doing this show today, he's in a hospital in Dallas and probably doesn't have a whole lot longer to live. And he has just been an incredible force in the business world, in the sales world, a man of integrity. He taught me so much because as we became personal friends, it became an every Saturday conversation. And he invested in me so greatly. And along with him would be Dr. Gene Hendricks, who was the dean at Mercer University that allowed me at 23 years old to be able to get into college and to prove that I really did want to do something with my life. and she was that person who took the chance on me, that took the risk, because there was nothing in my resume that would have indicated that I would ever achieve any level of success. And yet she believed in me, and one of those chance encounters, and I always just say a coincidence is when God chooses to remain anonymous.
There you go.
We met in a stairwell, and I was about to walk out of that building, probably never to walk back in, because I'd just been turned down again to go to Mercer University. And we met, and I had no idea who she was, and she reached out to me, and we started talking, and I told her why I was there and why I was walking out the door, And she took me back to an office and said, well, I'm the dean of Mercer University.
Wow.
And I was absolutely stunned, because I just talked about how rude these people were at Mercer University that wouldn't allow me in. And she opened that door, but it wasn't just that she opened the door. She knew the struggle that I was going through. And so she did interesting things. She said, I'm going to allow you to come into this school. I'm going to be your patron. But here's the deal. I want to see your face every week. I want to see your face in my space every week. And, I mean, this is the dean of the university that's saying, I want you to do this. And then when you get your grades, I want to be the first person that sees them. And I want to invest in your life. And I promise you, I did not know her. I had absolutely no connection to her. This was just totally one of those moments in time that happened for me. But that changed my life, and she became that great friend, that great influence, that for the rest of her life, it was a rare week that went by that we didn't talk to one another. Awesome. And if I was reading a book that I was really, truly into, I would send it to her and say, tell me from your perspective, awesome. Because she was a trained psychologist as her background. And she was just amazing with what she did in my life. But here's this leader of a school that would take the time to look at me and say, I want to see you every week. Only now, as I've moved through my life's journey, do I look back, and every day I'm a little more amazed that she would have taken that kind of time for an individual.
Well, those are two great stories. And first of all, you mentioned Zig Ziglar, and I didn't grow up on him because I was not much of a sales guy.
Yeah.
But I do remember him from an inspirational perspective, and certainly my prayers go out to Zig in this time. And the second thing is, when you mentioned, and both of you kind of touched on it and hinted on it, is the fact that leaders are doing certain things that have impacted your lives. Number one, they took time out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Number two, they held you accountable, especially in your case, Ike. She wants to see you every week, and she wants to be the first one to see those grades. And third, they want to meet regularly. It's not something that they would sit back and watch from a distance. So it's a constant interaction that separates them. Would you say?
Oh, it's an investment.
Absolutely. Great word.
It is an investment. And you think about how busy they are, and for them to see that spark, she saw it in you, mine saw it in me, and then make that investment in you. It's a commitment and an investment.
It is. And, you know, and God bless those who become that kind of person. I met Dr. Hendricks in a stairwell, literally, as I was walking out of the building. And as I've shared that story, I can't tell you how many times people have walked up to me and said, I need to meet my person in the stairwell. And what I've tried to challenge audiences with today is when I tell that story, is I say, why don't you be the person in the stairwell?
Yeah.
Why don't you be that person that believes in somebody and encourages them? Because that's you. All of us need those kind of people in our lives, no question. And we need to be that person in other people's lives.
I agree.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I'm going to step aside just slightly and kind of focus on you for a question, Ike, and then I have a question that I really want to, a burning question I've been wanting to ask you, Kathy, since we started our conversation.
All right.
So, Ike, what is your favorite John Maxwell leadership quote? Uh-huh. And before you answer this, you should know that I love John Maxwell.
I do, too.
I love John Maxwell. And actually, Derek Kayango, who runs the Global Soap Project, you may be familiar with that.
I am.
I'm actually a board member on that of that organization.
Outstanding.
He has told me, if you can find any, Alvin, if you can find anyone that knows him personally and can introduce me to him, I would be very appreciative. So don't know if you can make that happen.
I can get that done for you.
Just wanted to throw that
out.
John owes me because I helped to get him on at Augusta National years ago.
Oh. Oh,
so I still hold that chip.
So
we'll make that help. Ironically, was introduced to John over 30 years ago by Zig Ziglar.
Really?
And Zig ended up mentoring both of us.
Wow.
And so John became that great friend and has been. And, you know, John says that leadership is influence. Okay. Nothing more, nothing less. Leadership is influence. And I could... Man, so many of his quotes. He's third on that list of the leaders who've impacted me the most. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that he says that I think is so genius is he says, I don't care how good you are, how much energy you have, your work ethic, all of those things. Sooner or later, you max out. Then your success will rise or fall on the people that you have around you. Mm. And you need to be investing in those people that you have around you. As you lift them to a higher level, they lift you to a higher level. And that's not a matter of manipulation. It's a philosophical position that you take. You know, that was the Zig quote where he said, you know, if you will help other people get out of what they want in life, then those same people are going to help you to get what you want out of life. And he said, it's not a matter of manipulation. It's a matter of philosophy for me that this is the way that we do things. We lift each other up, and thereby, at the same time, we end up being lifted up.
So you start with an external focus, which again is servant leadership.
Leadership, that's it.
Right, so if we put a label on it. So fantastic, thank you for answering. And so Kathy, the burning question I have for you is, we talked a lot about the fact that you're the incoming president of Sherm Atlanta, and we also talked about, we didn't talk much about ICC, your company. So let's focus on that for just a minute or so and have you describe your ideal client.
Well, our ideal client today, I would say, is in that mid-sector business. It's not the Fortune 500. It's just under that.
Okay.
We used to have many clients in that Fortune 500, but what we found is we're more effective when a company is in that growth mode, and they're ready to get infrastructure. They're ready to get HR processes. They're ready to link strategy to the HR department. They're ready to measure the HR department's effectiveness. So that's where we've been most successful. And so it's interesting, during the recession, the companies that were coming to us or gravitating to us were nonprofits because of their issues with donations, and they were having to do more with less. So they were really focused on performance for the people that they had there.
Absolutely.
So it was very interesting to work with that group. And the second group that came to us during this recession was government.
Really?
Yes. And so we had never really worked in the government arena until the recession. But it makes sense. Tax revenue down, people doing more with less, accountability has never been one of their words they toss around a lot. And so we helped them with performance and accountability and metrics and strategy. And it's been a great experience. So I would say that our typical client in that kind of mid-size range of company, our verticals right now, nonprofit, hospitals, believe it or not,
healthcare.
Because they're going, healthcare's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're crazy. And
great opportunity when there's chaos.
Yes, and they are just now looking at HR departments going, I think we might need to get a little strategic, you know, because, you know, if you go into a hospital, they're not known for their technology savviness, their interconnectivity and all that sort of thing. So that's kind of where we're at today with our clients.
And thank you for that. You actually touched on a subject that I want to kind of move to next. So we first wanted to understand who your ideal client is, and you helped us do that eloquently. You also kind of spanned a little bit more and told us exactly what you do without saying this is what we do. But the question, I guess, next is how do potential clients know it's time to engage you? You touched on it briefly.
So, you know, we get phone calls of symptoms is what I like to say. You know, it's kind of like the doctor's office, right? So we get calls of we're having turnover issues, we're having morale issues, sales are down, you know, profits are down. All those are symptoms. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, those symptoms are a people-related issue.
That's the root cause.
It's a root cause. You know, and those root causes are around leadership. They're around performance. They're around accountability. They're around employee engagement. Mm. You know, and so those are the type of issues that if you boil all those symptoms down, that's usually where you find it.
It's interesting that you said it in that order because I never heard the word money. Never heard the word money.
As an issue,
yet,
you mean.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of companies, though, would want to say, well, it's just a money issue. Mm-mm. It's really not.
It's not. Not where people are concerned.
That's right.
Yeah, and you can't throw money at it to fix it either.
No, because I think today salary is just a given. There's too much information out there about salary. If you're not paying what you're supposed to be paying, then get out. So money's a given.
That's a stake. That's
table stakes. So really what they're looking for is how is my environment around here and how is my boss around here?
Interesting. Especially with the 4 different groups of people, and you know, millennials, you've got the baby boomers, you've got all these generations in there now. So they're looking for something different, and money is certainly not on the top of the millennials list,
no.
Or Gen X or Gen Y, et cetera. Ryan Jenkins knows a whole lot more about this stuff than I do.
Right.
But have you noticed much there between generations that you're getting calls from certain companies that are more startups or more mature? Is there a difference?
You know, what I hear is, These younger millennials that have been promoted to managerial positions, you know, are not getting along with boomers. You know, there's some sort of employee relations issues going on. And what we see is employee engagement is very different by those generations.
Okay.
If you think of boomers, they're really engaged by getting a lot of stuff done, mm-hmm. working a lot of hours,
right.
titles, all that sort of thing.
And I don't apologize for that.
I don't either. Hey, I don't either.
Because I resemble that.
And then the millennials and the Xers and the Yers that are coming up, their leadership style is going to be really interesting. Because if I think about that group, I have a son that's in that group. If I think about that group, they have been getting trophies all their life for just showing up. They even get a trophy to get to first base. You know, so when they get to work, where's the trophy? You know, so my son just started at Home Depot. He was there 30 days. He's on the lot. He's moving carts and he's doing stock. He comes home and he wants to know if he could have a conversation with the assistant manager, how he can be assistant manager. Well, Hunter, do you think you want to finish college first and maybe work about 90 days before you get into that? So that's their mentality.
Yeah.
You know, they have an attention span, but they bring so much to the workplace.
Yeah.
You know, I look at his generation, and they bring this technology, and they have this global presence because they've always been connected, and they're very flexible. And
very fast.
And very fast. So that's what we have to learn in the workplace is it's just another piece of diversity.
Mm.
Just like our regular types of diversity, this is just another one.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you mentioned that because we actually happen to have someone who can speak to that a little bit. So, Kevin, what are your thoughts based on what you're hearing so far?
Well, I completely agree with him. I think the main thing I see with a lot of my classmates, especially from high school that just graduated from college, is they're telling me there are no jobs out there right now. And my response to them is there's plenty of jobs. I have more jobs. I've been working about 7 jobs right now. There's plenty of jobs out there, but all of them want, they've been told and given everything in their lives, and they've been told that their degree that they just spent 4 or 6 years on is worth $70,000. So they go out there and they go and they want to be hired for $70,000 without any prior experience or anything. There's just a huge entitlement problem, yeah. And there's been a lot of kids that have just been sheltered. They have no idea what the real world's about. And I don't know if anyone's to blame. I think the good economy is to blame because there was just so much there. Their parents wanted to give their kids everything that they didn't have, and I think it's caused a big problem, especially with this economic drought.
Understood. Yep. Yeah. I agree.
Very interesting. So, Ike, you know, what struck me about Must Ministries is the size and the scope of Must. We talked a little bit about it earlier in the lobby. So could you kind of tell our listeners the size and the scope? How many people, how many companies get involved with Must?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Last year, to give you an idea, there were over 34,000 unique individuals that were touched by MUST. So 34,000.
34,000.
On any average given working day, we give away over 1 ton of groceries. So every day that's going on. We have a homeless shelter. The homeless shelter will take care of about 70 people right at it. It stays 98% occupied in the homeless shelter. You know, the average person, if you were to put all the data down, the average person who is homeless is a 9-year-old girl.
Really?
That's the average homeless person in America today. We do have 25, and then we have, in our homeless shelter, you can be there for 6 to 8 weeks. Well, we're helping you to get a job while you're there, helping you to interview, helping to get you clothes, all the kinds of things that you're going to need. We even do some OSHA-type training. To be able to help for people that, you know, are going to do some physical labor. We help them to get the steel-toed boots, those kinds of things. This past year, a little over 400 people got jobs through MUST. And since the recession started, over 1,200 people have gotten jobs. And we just have some amazing companies that come along and work with us, whether it's Tip Top Poultry in Cobb County or whether it's the Asbury Group, that's the automotive group. They've been a great partner to step in and to work with us. And, I could go on and on about some of the great companies that are there. And then after that 6 to 8 weeks, we have transitional housing.
Okay.
And we take care of another 60 to 70 people there. 25 of the people that are there are military veterans. And then, and I mean, that's the people who are staying in houses. But just like last week, I went out and I met with two men who live in the woods. They're not going to come in to the homeless shelter. They will come to what is called our Loaves and Fishes Kitchen, which is right beside our homeless shelter. And that's where we feed people. Last year, we did over 97,000 meals out of the Loaves and Fishes Kitchen there. And that kitchen is so small. We're very blessed. The Rotary Clubs of our area went together, and they're investing $50,000 to help us expand it and to make it bigger, and that's going to be great and help a lot of people. So we do that, but I think the signature program where people really know MUST is that this summer we helped, we served 189,648 lunches to children that would not have had lunch this summer. And I went out on some of the ride-arounds, and it will just grasp your heart what people are excited about, kids getting a lunch sack. And we've got volunteers who are making those sandwiches. So imagine 189,648 sandwiches and then the distribution network that gets them out. And then at Christmas, we do what's called Toy Shop, and we're estimating this year somewhere between 4,500 and 5,000 kids we'll get toys through the toy shop. And you guys at KSU, you know, are fabulous partners. You may or may not be aware of this. We have a clinic at our MUST location on Cobb Parkway, and we have the KSU clinic that is there.
I didn't know that.
School of Nursing is right there in our building, helping to serve people that have great needs in their life. And then when we're trying to determine where we're going to go and where we're going to serve next, we're very fortunate that you guys send over from KSU MBA students who help to do the demographic work so that we're not just, you know, shooting
in the dark.
But we've got the target audience, and we know what's going on, and we can go after it. So, like I say, you guys at KSU, y'all do food drives for us. There's so many things. Von Williams has become a great friend over there. Of getting the athletes involved. I got to go over and speak to the athletes, and he asked me to speak on the topic of servant leadership. Because that's you guys. That's your philosophy of don't just come here and spend 4 years in the community and not even know the community that you were in.
Correct.
So, man, I just applaud you and salute you for what you're doing over there. And Dan Papp's a great leader, so
yes, he is.
We're just I'm a huge KSU fan. Even though y'all kicked me out, I am still a huge KSU fan.
Well, we appreciate both of you. You know, what's interesting about it, there were several interesting things about what you just said. Number one, you talked about housing for veterans and, you know, yes, unemployed, et cetera. And we have a current student named Leonard Adams. He's a CEO of Quest 35, and that is exactly what his mission is to help build housing for those indigents and veterans.
Wow.
And so that's important. And the second thing is that when we did our executive MBA program, one of the foci, one of the things we really want to look at was what is the complete leader? What does that person do that not just a business acumen piece, not just the interpersonal piece, because you need both to be able to succeed in business, but where are you giving back? And so we created an award. It's called the Ed Montagne Award, and it's giving annually to one student in the graduating class that has exemplified the leadership, servant leadership. And Ed Montagne was a former student of ours, who's no longer with us, and it was actually based on the kind of things he did, the things he exemplified. Because leadership is about behaviors. It's not just about what you think internally. You have to display it because somebody else sees it. Because if we just think we want to do good things, but you never do anything that is worthwhile for anybody else, are you truly a servant leader? You know, there's one of my favorite quotes from John Maxwell. If you think you're a leader, take a look behind. If nobody's following you, you're merely taking a walk.
You're exactly right.
So I know that that you have worked with many impressive companies with Musk Ministries. Can companies work with you from a perspective of customized opportunities, or do they just need to fall into what you already have?
Oh, no. That's what a great question. Let me tell you about one of the customized opportunities. There's a chemical company that was started in 1645.
Wow.
Over in the Netherlands, and believe it or not, the Nobel Peace Prize, is named after Alfred Nobel. Mm-hmm. He was actually a part of that company because, he made his fortune in helping to create dynamite.
Interesting.
And then one day had the unusual experience of reading his obituary. His brother Ludwig died, but they accidentally ran Alfred's obituary. And when he read his obituary, they called him a merchant of death. And he said, I will not have this to be my legacy. And he took his fortune and created the Nobel Prizes. So this chemical company that has a relationship to him and all of these years, they have one of their large operations in Cobb County. They wanted to do a great team building exercise. And one of our people, Lane Henderson, put together the exercise of, okay, we need a lot of bikes at Christmas for kids. So we'll get unassembled bikes. They're cheaper. You put your team, they came to our location. We have bikes scattered all over the building. Okay. We're going to see who can put the bikes together, not just the fastest, but where they actually work and there's not things left over. And this team ended up, they ended up using it in such a great way because they bought the bikes because they thought, oh, this is a great idea, brought their people in, had a fabulous experience of everybody working together. And so that's an idea of a customized. Harden Yes. Construction brought out 80 or 90 people to our place, and they did landscaping work. I met their CEO, who was actually putting down pine straw,
Wow.
which I thought was pretty cool. And then they invited me back. They're one of my favorite companies because they had a barbecue then.
Oh, that's
that
important.
Afternoon. Yeah, these kinds of things are very important. So, yes, and feel free to call us at Must. Ann Ogburn heads up our volunteer experience, and we want it to be a great experience. We want it to be when people finish working there that day and they're standing around the water cooler the next day. Mm-hmm. They didn't just say, well, we pushed some boxes from one side of the warehouse to the other, but they will be able to stand there and to tell the story of what Must is doing for people who are in need. And I tell you, there's just something about doing something for people who may never, ever be able to do something for you that gives you the greatest gratification that you can experience in life.
And that's fantastic. And so, I told you both that when we first were in the green room that the biggest issue we'd have in our conversation today was that there wouldn't be enough time. And so we're drawing close to the time that we have allotted. And certainly I know that you're very busy people. And the fact that you've taken time out to spend time with us is definitely, we truly appreciate it.
I think both of us are just very honored to be here.
I am.
It's just too fun. So as I kind of wind it down, I have two other questions I want to ask you. And so I'll start with you, Kathy. And I know that, we've talked a lot about this and we've kind of hinted around various aspects of it. And actually, sometimes you've actually nailed a few aspects of it. But I want to hit it directly, because there's people listening to the program that are thinking, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time. I don't have enough, you know, things I can really focus on to give of my time and be a servant leader. What do we miss out on by not volunteering?
Oh, my goodness. I started volunteering with ACSS, I was telling Ike, when we were in the green room. And for me, I do a lot during this holiday season. And so for me, it makes my holiday. It's what it's about. So for me, it's going in, and it's a homeless shelter downtown. And we help with job readiness programs. And so our company and our clients, we make gift bags for them every single year and put, you know, toiletries, hats, scarves, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you look and you give them that bag, and they are so thankful for a bar of soap. It makes you feel so crazy to be worried about the things that I worry about on a daily basis. You know, so it grounds me. It makes me thankful. It makes me know that hopefully I've made a difference, maybe in just one person's life, by sitting down and having a meal with them. So it's very personal for me, very personal.
And you would miss out on all of that if you did not volunteer.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Ike?
Problem with her going first is she says everything that could possibly be said in such an eloquent way. I think if you don't volunteer, what you miss out on is, and I think everything you were saying is called perspective. It puts it in perspective. When I go out in that van and it says Must Ministries on the side, and I ride with a lady named Paula Rigsby, and she blows the horn on this van, and suddenly you see all these children running, just running to this van. And you walk to the back and you open it up, and you've got a sack that's been prepared by volunteers. And you have a volunteer like Inez, who's 84. And Inez will take the bags, and she sets at the counter, and she colors them, colors pictures on them. Hmm. And when you see the kids come up and they start looking for a bag that someone has taken the time to just simply take a crayon and do a picture, you realize what they value, and that you're watching them. And then you have some of the children who come back up and say, could I have something for my mother? And, of course, we're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to just feed the children. And on that first day that I went out, this little boy came back and asked me, you know, can I have one for my mother? And I gave it to him. And Paula looked at me after the children were gone, and she said, you gave him an extra lunch, didn't you? And I said, well, yeah, because he was staying his mother. She said, that's okay, Ike. She said, when we get to the last stop, if we're one lunch short, then you can tell that child why you gave it away.
Mm.
So I got in the van, couldn't sit real well for a long time, but Paula taught me a lesson that day, and that is, you know, we're out there to serve children. Those children didn't ask for the lot that they're in life right now, and to see that a sandwich can make a difference in a child's life, to see children exchanging a paper bag, to see who gets the color picture on their bag. It just makes you put it into perspective. When the rest of the world lives on less than $2 a day.
Yeah.
Yep.
You go to South Africa like I did, and you go out to one of the townships, and you live with the people. I went college students there and taught leadership. And you see the corrugated tin huts, and you realize how much you've been blessed with. How can you not come back and invest in the lives of others? Because that's truly the investment, the gift that keeps giving back to you.
Yep.
So if you want to get out of your rut, go out and do something for someone who's in a rut, and you'll find yourself getting pulled out really, really quickly.
That's true.
Great, great, great responses, great remarks. So now my final question for each of you. I appreciate you for having allowed us to go over. So we'll make your answer to this question available on our web posting. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability? And we have a policy of ladies first on our program.
Well, when I got into HR a long time ago, 20 plus years ago, I started reading all the books by Stephen Covey. And so I found that his books were grounded in principle, principle-centered leadership, 7 habits of highly effective people. And then I had the honor of my company sent me out there to be trained in that and certified in that, got to go to, you know, Utah and breathe it all in. And so I just felt it was so grounded. I know it was spiritually grounded. I know it was for, mm-hmm. by his faith.
Absolutely.
And so the principles to me were universal principles that he taught. So if I have a question about what's right and what's wrong or how to do something, that's my referral place.
Mm. It's an amazing book because the principles are so simple.
Yes.
But that's the elegance of the book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we turn to you, Ike.
Wow. You know, there's so many. See You at the Top changed my life. So how could I not mention Zig's book? Because it did. You know, for a kid who grew up in inner city Atlanta, that had flunked out of college and didn't know what in the world he was going to do with his life. And you read that book, and it challenges you, and it turns you around. Man's Search for Meaning. It's not a business book. But
Viktor Frankl.
That book right there. That mm-hmm. was Dr. Hendricks' favorite book. Mm-hmm. So that influenced me there. But if I had to choose a contemporary one, if you said, okay, somebody's on a desert island, they know they don't know anything about leadership, and they've got to build a company, what would you give to them? I give to them The Leadership Challenge by Kunz and Posner. Mm-hmm. I think it's remarkable in the depth that it goes through that you could take that one book and do great things. And if I was an advanced mature leader, John Maxwell's The 21 mm-hmm. Irrefutable Laws are, again, principle-centered yeah. all the way. So, you know, I just love reading. And Jim Collins, my goodness.
Good to Great, I was going to say.
And Good to Great.
Right, people awesome. On the bus. I mean, I use that tagline all the time. I mean, you know, it's so simple, but it's, you know.
It's so profound.
It is.
That's the great ones make it simple. They yeah. really, really do.
It sounds simple, but we know in practice it's difficult. Leadership's hard sometimes.
That is. Hey, what is your favorite one?
My favorite book, the book that has most impacted my leadership ability, is the Bible.
I knew you were going to say that. Make me feel guilty as all get out.
Oh, no.
I'm sitting here trying not to be the preacher, Alvin.
No, but you're a senior pastor. It would have been easy for you to say that.
Yeah, when my church votes me out because Alvin said the Bible, Ike.
Oh, that is hysterical.
No, and the reason why is because, you know, I'm working on my doctorate, and it is in leadership and teams. And uh-huh. so what I've found in my research is that, you know, it's important to get to seminal pieces. In other words, the mm-hmm. piece that spawned all the other pieces.
Right.
And if you go back, as you well know, as you all know, when you go back to the Bible, it has spawned everything else. When you go and look at, you know, what Solomon wrote, you know, Proverbs and Songs, I mean, every lesson you ever want, it typically comes back to some book in the Bible.
Nehemiah is one of my favorites for leadership. I mean, my goodness, it's got everything in there from, you know, what do you do? Because I always say a great vision comes out of a great burden.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nehemiah just simply asking the question, so how is it in Jerusalem? Well, it's not so good. You know, the walls are torn down, the gates have been burned, and he said, and I sat down. And I think that's so profound because sometimes you hear things that just take the air out of you, and all you can do is just sit down. And then he said, and I wept, and I prayed, and I fasted. And he gives you the formula from a spiritual perspective of when you're faced with a great difficulty, then what are you going to do? Then you have to make up your mind. Do you just go, oh, well, that's over there and I'm over here? Mm-hmm. Are you going to make a difference?
And the making up the mind is called choice.
Absolutely.
And leadership is a choice.
Yes, it is.
It is a choice. I taught today to a group of students before I came here at Fertile Prep School, and a lot of them are ADD and have a lot of issues. And I told them, I said, your choices today equal your lifestyle tomorrow. Mm. And it's the most simple way that I can say it, yeah. because every choice has a consequence, yeah. and then your life becomes the sum total of those consequences, be they good or be they bad.
That's right.
It's true.
Because the world only gives you what you tell it you want.
Absolutely.
So Ike and Kathy, on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from both of you, certainly today, and we appreciate you accepting the invitation to join us. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future if we can work out our schedules. Is that a deal?
Be a thrill.
Absolutely.
Not a deal, but a thrill. I think I have to use that one.
I'm getting ready to recruit a board member that's over here to my right and one directly in front of me. I feel good about this thing.
You feel a sermon coming on.
Hallelujah.
So with that in mind, could each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you either by email and or by phone?
Sure. I think the easiest way to get to me is probably LinkedIn, Kathy Misseldine, or Twitter. @ Kathy Misseldine. So those are two quick ways to get to me.
And can you spell Misseldine for?
Yes, MISSILDINE.
Okay.
And for me, Twitter is great. It's Ike, IKE, Reichard, REIGHARD. LinkedIn as well, or Ike.Reichard, R-E-I-G-H-A-R-D, at gmail.com.
Because I've got a feeling that this particular segment will be very popular, and you're going to get a lot of questions and or responses, and so people are going to be reaching out.
So. Oh, I hope so. I love helping people, so that's good.
Well, with your responses of your emails and your phone, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. And so we invite those on the line to be checking our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. We had a ton of leadership resources today, didn't we?
Absolutely.
It was impressive. Wow. So also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. For those of you who are interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on the Global Leader Radio site to connect with us and sign up for an information session. We have one coming up this coming Saturday, as a matter of fact. I know it'll probably be a little delayed for those who listen to podcasts a little later, but December 1st, we're going to have our December information session. It starts at 10 and ends around 12 o'clock. So those who need to know a little bit more about some of the things that go into making great leaders need to be understanding who we are and what we do. So join us again at the same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.